We are involved in it. There's no getting away from it. A recent play in New York had a lot of publicity. I never saw it, but the title was very intriguing. The title was Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. You ever felt that way? But you see, we can't get off. You can't even get away. There's no place to hide now. Even if a group of Christian people were to buy a remote island somewhere in the Pacific and go there and try to get out of this mess and try to establish an ideal Christian community, I guess it wouldn't be long before somebody would want it for an airstrip or would discover that it had uranium or something of the kind, and the era of peace would all be over. You cannot disengage yourself from the world. You're in it. And what this means is that you either face up to the realities of the world or you become an unreal person and turn a blind eye and don't see it, like the Kentucky judge. He was pretending it wasn't there and he hoped it would go away. It won't go away. The sexual revolution is here. It's here to stay. It's here to run its course to the bitter end. It's not only in our world, it invades our homes. You can't buy a newspaper or a magazine nowadays without confronting it. You can't switch on your radio or your TV. It is thundering at your children all the time. You can't protect them. They're in it. Their friends are in it. Their generation is in it. So as Christian people, we are involved. And it's no use pretending otherwise. Second, as Christians, we welcome some aspects of the sexual revolution. Otto Pieper makes a very penetrating observation in his book. He says, there is hardly any other area of life in the Western world that has been so profoundly affected by the general upheaval of social, political, and economic conditions as our evaluation of sex. And yet, strangely enough, there is no sphere of social relations in which such radical and revolutionary change has been accepted with such ease and with so little opposition. The sexual revolution has come and has met only half-hearted opposition. Now, why have the Christian churches been half-hearted in their opposition? Oh, you could give many reasons, but my guess is that the real reason is that we have in part welcomed it. We have not wanted to go back to what I talked to you about last night. We have been somewhat ashamed of our negative tradition. We have felt in our bones that this was not Christian, that this did not express the Bible. And so we've let the revolution come. William Temple, the great Archbishop of Canterbury, said once, I would rather accept all the risks involved in our present open discussion of sex than go back to the era of shamefaced silence. And that goes for me too, and I hope it goes for you. We can go further than that. Paul Lacy, a fellow Quaker, in a recent very penetrating and thoughtful little pamphlet, said, we have rediscovered the joy and beauty which have made images of sexual love among the most meaningful ways to express the truths of man's relationship to God. That's talking like a Christian. So we welcome some aspects of the sexual revolution. And I want to mention one rather peripheral aspect, which to me is very challenging. Eric Fromm, one of our leading psychotherapists, said something at the Orthopsychiatric Conference over on the West Coast in April that was reported in the press. And I haven't seen the full statement yet because I've been in Europe all the time, but it fascinated me. He said that he had come to the conclusion that the pattern of psychotherapy is changing in our time. That Freud, in saying that the roots of most of our human emotional disorders lay in the area of sex, was speaking the truth for his time. But now we have had a progressive emancipation about sex, and our inhibitions about sex have been greatly released, with the result that psychotherapists today are discovering that the root of the problems of their patients are not sexual frustration, but a feeling of rootlessness, a feeling of meaninglessness in life. Now, do you see the significance of this? What he was really saying was that we have focused so much on sex, that we've been preoccupied with sex as a cause of human problems. But now that we've got that out of the way, we're discovering that the real cause of human problems is the lack of real religion. That what is really bothering people is not what Freud said was bothering them. What's really bothering them is that their life has no meaning for them. They have no sense of destiny. And this would almost suggest to me that if we can only get over this preoccupation with sex and be a little more realistic about it and get it out of the way, we may find that people are prepared to face their real problems. And their real problems are religious. Thirdly, we inevitably as Christians deplore some other aspects of this sexual revolution. And what I deplore particularly is the exploitative elements in it, in a capitalist society. The vested interests that have fastened on erotic stimulus and used it in so many ways, in flooding the market with pornography and pouring forth sexual pathology until we're almost sick of it. I must say that when I lived in the Soviet Union, it was very refreshing to find that there is nothing suggestive anywhere. There's no newspaper, there's no magazine, there's no movie, there's no radio program, there's no TV program, there's no play, there's nothing anywhere that is sexually suggestive. Well, of course, you can do that in a society where the government says it shall be so and it is so, but in a capitalist society it is otherwise. Anything that you can use to make money, you go ahead and make money. And this exploitative element is very sickening. And of course, all of us have the deepest pity and compassion for our youth, because the youth of today are living through the most difficult time in the whole of human history for young people. They're bearing a tremendous burden, bless them. Let's give them our love and our understanding and support, because they need it all. They are forced into all kinds of situations in which they are getting no clear guidance as to where to go. And we see the melancholy totals mount, the venereal disease rate skyrocketing in the 11 to 15 age group, the forced marriages, the illegitimate children, the abortions, and behind it all, the tragic degradation which was so dramatically described by your great American poet, Archibald MacLeish, and J.B., where one of the devils, Nichols, said this: Satan sees. He sees the parked car by the plane tree. He sees behind the fusty door, beneath the rug, these almost children struggling on the awkward seat. Every impossible, delighted dream she'd ever had of loveliness, of wonder, spilled with her garters to the filthy floor. Absurd despair, ridiculous agony. We are deeply moved by the degradation into which our children are being pushed when they're so ill-equipped to handle it. And so we have a feeling sometimes of being betrayed, even those of us who have welcomed the sexual revolution. We feel a bit like the people of Cuba who who supported a revolution to get rid of a dictator and only found that they'd lost their liberty and were dominated by a greater tyranny than before. Sometimes we feel that way. And then finally, and this has been a long lecture and you must forgive me, but it's a big subject. Finally, we are committed as Christian people to the task of reinterpretation, unalterably and inexorably committed because we're involved. I remember Abraham Stone used to say that that the Christian standard of sex morality was protected by three fears: the fear of infection, the fear of conception, and the fear of detection. The power of those three fears to protect and restrain has been greatly weakened, as I've indicated to you. Fear is an ineffective weapon now. We cannot lock up our young people after dark. We cannot put ball and chain around their ankles so that they can't stray too far from home. And we cannot restrain them by fear either. They must learn to develop their own inner controls. And they live in a world where the direction of the cultural stream has been reversed. And we never lived in such a world as that. Up to now, the cultural stream has been in the direction of our traditional morality. And it's been understood that to defy the traditional morality could be done, but you did it at your peril, and you did it against the cultural stream. The direction of the cultural stream has changed, and in many, many sections of American culture today, the smart thing is to do what was considered immoral and wrong in the past. And this is what our young people are having to contend with. We never knew what it was to live in a world saturated with erotic stimulation, with the cultural stream pushing away from the Christian morality. And in the face of this, in their bewilderment, our young people are saying, "Why shouldn't I?" And they want answers to their questions. And the old bogeymen won't do anymore. We have to have a Christian ethic that we understand and have thought out and that we can present to them clearly and we hope convincingly. Well, that brings me to the end of what I have to say. And my next lecture this evening will try to look at this task of rethinking our Christian ethic and what it involves. Now I have left 3 or 4 minutes, is it? I have been giving you very little opportunity to... About what? About 8 minutes. Oh, I don't think it's as much as that. No, no. I must keep faith with you and dismiss you at the appropriate time, but let's say we have about 4 minutes. Would anybody like to ask a question or make an observation? I don't think the church can...